Welcome back to TrueNAS Tech Talk. TrueNAS 2510 RC1 is out in the wild and testing well. We'll also talk about that funny new icon that's shown up on your toolbar, TrueNAS Connect. All this plus your questions on the Spotlight search and more. Well, 2510 RC1 is now out and in the wild. It's been loose for a little bit more than a week and a half now, Chris, and we've already seen some pretty good adoption rates. I think we've got about 5,000 people have jumped on board and updated to this pre-release version. As always, we appreciate all the feedback that gets sent into us, whether it's via email, via bug reports, or on our own forums. But let's just take a real quick moment here, Chris, and let's review kind of what's coming up in 2510 real short.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, the 5,000 you've already jumped on, you're already seeing these things, but for everyone else who's waiting for that .0 to drop, you don't have much longer here, just a few weeks towards the end of October. But let's hop into it. So one of the things you'll notice immediately is the next time you do updates, there's a whole update screen that's gotten a huge refresh. It just looks way different. Gone are the old days of trains and all that good stuff. Instead, you just pick a profile. What's your risk tolerance? Are you an early adopter? Do you want to be on the release train? All that good stuff now is awesome. And it's just going to make it super convenient to say, this is when I want to get notified of updates. Of course, you can manually always pick and choose or opt to not do updates. We're not forcing anything on you. It's more of just a convenience function of, I don't want to get bugged until I know it's reached this level of stability or quality.
Yeah. And we've done some changes in the user screen. It's not quite the same as the updates, but we've tried to make better account management. There's more streamlined user creation workflows. Mm-hmm. There's better sort of at a glance access to the account information. I actually use this quite a bit myself in my own 2510 testing for, API accounts, because I'm playing with our new API a bit. I'm really enjoying that. But it's definitely improved in that area as well. So we're hoping that the overall management interface and flow of that is going to be a pleasant surprise for everybody by how much it's been enhanced.
Yeah, I think folks are going to pick up on a theme here pretty quick. As you update to 2510, you'll see a lot of user experience things. The UX has been improved in a lot of key areas, and you're going to see that theme play out all throughout 2026 as well. We're going to be working real hard to try and, take what's really an awesome product that's rock solid, but also make it a little easier to drive. Less of the 747 cockpit when you sit down is like, whoa, and more of the touchscreen approach. Like, yeah, okay, I know what I want to do. Let's make it easy and convenient, not make you hunt through, a field of buttons. But anyway, that's all good stuff. Related, we also have some comprehensive networking enhancements designed for terabit Ethernet performance. So NVMe over Fabric support. That's cool. And then we have NVMe over TCP for the community edition, RDMA for the enterprise side. Of course, RDMA is great. That kind of coincides with some of the work we did earlier in 2504 to do RDMA over NFS. So that's good stuff. Reduces latency on your high-performance enterprise systems. Additional drivers for 400 gig networking support, which is great. Again, maybe not all of you live kind of in that space here, but a lot of the enterprises are pushing it now.
Yeah, I wish I had 400 gig at home. I mean, just for bragging rights, 40 gigs, more than enough for my current needs, and probably still overkill for most people out there. You don't need to stream your Linux ISOs at 40 gigabits, but
yeah.
I've been playing with some of the NVMe stuff in both the community edition and some of the enterprise. It's funny, even on a non-NVMe, storage media, you can see improvements from it, just from cutting out some of the TCP overhead if you're on RDMA, or just getting away from, the SCSI or the underlying protocol. Your client machine thinks it's connecting to an NVMe device. It's pretty neat.
It is nice. I say for my home network, I've settled on, I have a couple 10 gig links for the TrueNASs, and then most of the switches are connected at 2.5 gig. I went that route. And of course, a lot of the desktops and clients are still 1 gig connection. So nothing too fancy. I'm not tempted to go any crazier than that at the moment. But next up, virtual machine improvements. So one of the things we had mentioned, of course, in a previous episode was the VM system's gotten some additional love here in 2510. One of the features that didn't make the beta but is available in the RC now is the ability to import and export your disks for your VM. So what does this mean? This means if you have like a VMDK, a QCOW, any other common VM disk format, you can now point at the location on your pool, import it into the zVol, and then run that off the zVol. Go the other direction too. So if you want to export that VM at some point later, you can export it back to the QCOW or VMDK or RAW or whatever, and then take it and import on another TrueNAS or another VM system. So that's just one of those missing pieces we've wanted for quite some time. It's nice to see that land.
Yeah, a little bit of portability back and forth when you're importing, exporting VMs. It's always nice. Plus, then if there's additional software that's distributed as sort of a prepackaged VM image, you can say, well, mm-hmm. I'll just take this, you know, flat VM file. I'm going to be able to import it and run it directly on TrueNAS. Now, we got a little bit of extra goodies in there as far as the VMs for enterprise as well. We've sort of tied it in with our high availability support. So now you can have VM failover between the two cluster nodes there. So both halves mm-hmm. of a TrueNAS dual controller system. Useful for the enterprise users who wanted to say, hey, let's run a couple little VMs on our system itself, whether using them as like a third vote in a cluster somewhere for a hypervisor, or just you want to have a workload that runs right next to your storage.
There's more reasons now for wanting to run a VM on an enterprise system. For example, Veeam announced they're going to have their Veeam appliance application where it basically runs as a VM. You could throw that on your TrueNAS, and now you have a full-blown Veeam system set up running directly on TrueNAS Enterprise. You don't need that external server. That's really cool. So again, we got to have the VM infrastructure to support that.
Yeah, it backup workloads. We've had some, I think, people doing VMS, so video management systems, mm-hmm. you know, NVRs that aren't in our catalog. They say, hey, we want to run this sort of custom or proprietary NVR. Well, they run the VM itself directly on TrueNAS, and they say, now it's once the data is sent to the NVR, it's just right there on the storage as well. We don't need to worry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my case, the only VM I'm really running is HAOS for Home Assistant right now, which works wonderfully on my TrueNAS. I have all my voice-enabled goodies for, I even bought some of their little prototype, like Google Home-type speakers as well.
Oh, neat.
They're pretty cool. Works great.
Are you at the Star Trek point where you're yelling, hey, computer, to adjust your lights and your temperatures?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do that for my home theater. So awesome. I have all the voice commands programmed in so I can say, hey, it's time to watch a movie. And it goes and it dims all the lights and turns on the home theater audio system and the projector and all that good stuff. And then I can use voice commands, say, hey, I want to change over to the Nintendo Switch. And it does that. And it's all great. My next little home project is to build a little touchscreen for that. So you have something like I'll probably mount it on the wall. So as you walk into the room, you can just hit a button.
And you know, it's to do the you know, thing. It's going to have the Star Trek skin over it. We all know that.
Oh, of course it will. I mean, it has to. That's a requirement.
Now, speaking of videos, gaming, and the future, we added the NVIDIA Open Kernel module for their GPU support. What that does is it lets us have compatibility with the latest NVIDIA graphics cards. So especially including that Blackwell, the 50 series, and the RTX Pros. So that gives you the real modern GPU acceleration capabilities for your apps, your container workloads. We have a section under the 2510 release notes talks about the NVIDIA GPU support for the compatibility details on that. And we do understand this does remove the support for those older cards that lack that little the GPU system processor that NVIDIA calls it. Hmm. However, the enterprising members of our community here have decided to say, let's find a way to toggle that switch back and forth based on, you know, turning the kernel module from the open back to the proprietary. That's available in our forums for those of you who are still on a 10 series card. I have a couple of them myself. You can go ahead and check out that fix. It's a fairly actually straightforward fix. And you know, we always applaud the community saying, you know, hey, we want to change a little bit of something. We have open development, all of our sources up on GitHub, and you can sort of take a look at it and say, you know, we'd like to make a little switch around. So, I mean, hats off to those of you in the community making these changes, and it's neat to see sort of the creative process at work there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the ZFS side, of course, everyone's excited here about ZFS goodies. We've covered some of this before, but some more fixes have merged in. Of course, a lot of the ZFS updates for stability, some encrypted snapshot replication fixes, enhanced memory pressure handling, which is great when you have VMs running on the same host and they're competing for memory. And you know, Arc's got to be able to release faster pool operations, improved IO scaling. There's some new direct IO support for better performance in virtualized environments. And of course, that little ZFS rewrite command we've mentioned before, which is a great way to go and kind of relay out your data anytime you've changed topologies. So good stuff.
Yeah, we'll pop a little link up in the corner there to the previous discussion that Chris and I had. We dissected quite a lot of stuff that's coming in OpenZFS 2.3.4. So check out that previous video if you're interested in getting into the real technical mm-hmm. details. One other thing that we've added also, it's not a ZFS thing, but it has been requested quite a bit, is the automatic migration of applications when you're changing your apps pool. So this is a case where if you, mm-hmm. You started on hard drives and you've added some solid state, or maybe you've just changed your solid state pool around, or you've got a larger, or you went from SATA to NVMe. you can now do a automatic migration of the existing apps when you're changing your application pool. So this eliminates most of that manual reconfiguration, and it helps reduce downtime during pool transitions. You know, you don't have to go into a command line and poke around with, you know, ZFS sends, receives, or rsync anymore. You can just say, hey, I'd like to move things from, you know, the HDD pool over to the SSD pool, and click the button, and it'll queue it up in a job and say, all right, well, we'll migrate all that data over, we'll take the apps down, start them up over on the new location, and everything will be up and running quickly.
That's great. Well, I've personally been running now the RC for more than a week. I updated the day it came out, found one minor issue related to an app update. I had image that required an update. I was getting a validation error. We've already had a fix come out. I've tested the fix. That's great. That's already landed for the .0. But apart from that, everything else has kind of just been drama free. SMB still works. My VMs still work. All the UI things I go click around on just seem to work. So as far as an RC goes, that's kind of what you want to see. Hopefully that bodes well for the .0. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've been playing with it since that beta release, as I mentioned, for hypervisor storage, just for the NVMe over Fabric stuff. And it's nice because, you know, you're saying that everything works perfectly well. And I'm saying, well, I know everything works perfectly well. I want to play with the new toys. I want to poke and break things. And that's kind of what the beta is for. And we did find that one thing between beta and RC with NVMe over Fabric. And that one's been resolved and is working really nicely now on the RC. So it's great. I have a feeling
we should get into the other kind of hidden little elephant in the room here. Yeah. People maybe have started noticing.
Maybe part of the reason that some of you have decided to jump to 2510 as well is we've introduced a new little feature in there. So some of you early adopters might have noticed there's an icon in the toolbar up at the top of 2510 RC1 now that talks about a feature called TrueNAS Connect. It's the little cloud with the TrueNAS symbol in there. We're going to have a bunch more official communication going out about this in the near future. There's a blog post sort of as a pre-announcement of it and invitation to the public preview, but you can expect some more information dumps. But, you know, those of you tuning in today, you get to get some of the highlights right now. So let's dig into this a bit.
You're on the cutting edge. If you listen to T3, you get all the inside baseball. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So Connect, we'll just go through it at a high level. We'll talk about features, but it's an optional service that allows you to link your TrueNAS system up to the TrueNAS Connect infrastructure in a safe and secure manner, which enables a lot of next generation cool new NAS functionality to get delivered down the road. So a couple things before we get into the features. It's still very early in the Connect lifecycle. It's just released into open beta for those running 2510. RC1 or later, but what exactly does Connect provide? So let's do our quick rundown of some of the features that are available today in the early beta stages, then we'll get into some of the things that are coming. But some of the things right up front, we'll just kind of jump into the first few items here. We can sit and talk about some of these or chase them if you want, Chris. Yeah. But it's a cloud account. So Connect will, your TrueNAS connects out to the cloud infrastructure, and it'll do, first of all, the automatic things like SSL certificate generation and hostname generation. That's super important. It's 2025. We need valid SSL certs everywhere. We want valid SSL certs everywhere. It actually kills me anytime I connect something that's not SSL encrypted and properly. I don't mean self-signed certs. I mean like the real deal. So that's something you just get. I mean, that's a base foundation feature of Connect that everything else kind of builds on top of, because without those secure links, you don't want to do a lot else.
Absolutely. I mean, we could take a quick little moment here just to talk about the intentional security design. So as I'm sure some of you have said, you said, whoa, hold on, cloud for my TrueNAS. We just want to make this clear. We here at TrueNAS, we don't have any visibility into those running systems, nor do we want it.
Yeah,
nor
I don't want to see your ISOs.
We don't want to see it. We don't want to know. We are the Swiss bank. We you know, you've got a number. That's what you are. We don't have, there's no command or control actions that can go through TrueNAS Connect like that. It is a one-way piece to process alerts, ask for certificate generation, and if you choose to enable them, you can have, you know, your statistics going in there. All the management takes place in your own browser session over secure WebSocket. So your own browser session still has to have routability to your TrueNAS. So if you're on the same network, it can connect directly through those secure WebSockets. If you're on a separate network, you can set up a VPN tunnel if you're using, you know, Tailscale, WireGuard, something like that. And then you have that control channel. But that control channel and your authentication to it, it never flows through are TrueNAS Connect servers? We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't want to know.
Yeah, well, you got to understand, most of us here on the TrueNAS side, we run TrueNAS ourselves. And we wanted to build a service that we would feel comfortable hooking up our own home systems to or our work systems. And, you know, if it's good enough for us, that was kind of the bar. Like, oh, well, I trust it because, you know, we designed it in such a way where I don't have to worry about the security of the TrueNAS, you know, internal network and all that good stuff. So, anywho, we just wanted to state that right out front because a lot of people use a TrueNAS so they can keep things kind of on-prem and behind the firewall, which we get 100%. But there are some nice modern conveniences you do want by being connected to the internet. I mean, we use it for updates, of course. That's how you fetch your apps and download containers and all that. But being able to do things like the SSL cert generation, host names, all that good stuff is important. And you'll see some of these other features we're going to talk about here next. Like, for example, Connect provides obviously a multi-system view, so you can log into one site, see, manage all your TrueNASs from that single interface, if you will. Very handy. Automatic alerting facilities is another big one. Gone are the days where you have to go set up email by hand manually in 2025. Like, that's just, I hate doing that. It's annoying.
Yeah.
So no Connect more. Just means like, yeah.
No more SMTP servers having to be configured in there. No more worrying about that. Just tell it, you know, you can pass your alerts up to us. And then crucially, we can also do things like alert you if you haven't heard from your TrueNAS system in a while. Like say, hey, this could be, you know, maybe your network's down and you're away. And you'd say, hey, my system might be down or my network might be down. But it could also be a case where you've got multiple systems at different sites and you don't want to have to worry about is it the VPN to this site that's down and that's why I can't get it? It'll just be, no, they're all just sort of sending their little heartbeat up to TrueNAS Connect to say, you know, I'm okay, I'm healthy. And then one of them will suddenly, if it stops phoning in, Connect's going to go, you know, hey, I haven't heard from that other one in a while. I haven't seen that one in a while. Maybe let's now raise a flag that's coming from us, not having to rely on your network connection to say, hey, something's a little amiss there. And in the future, we're looking to expand this beyond email. So we're looking at things like webhooks for Slack and PagerDuty and things like that.
SMS
alerts, even if you want to go to that level, you can get a ping on your phone.
Well, the idea is there's levels, right? So it's like, okay, for some alerts, just send me an email, I'll get to it and I get to it. Oh, I've dropped a drive. Yeah, I definitely want an SMS like immediately. So I know I need to get that, you know, scheduled for replacement, you know, so there will be thresholds. Some alerts like, oh, apps have updates. Great. Just shoot me an email.
Yeah.
You know, others are more urgent.
Yeah. And in like a small, medium business or enterprise kind of environment, you could say, hey, once we get the webhooks going, you put in an alert for your system that you're running TrueNAS Community Edition on. It drops a ticket into a Slack channel and says, hey, I'm system whatever, and I just lost a drive. Maybe you'll have somebody who automatically sees that, turns that into a problem ticket for your own organization and says, hey, I'd better go grab a drive from the backup units or grab a warm spare or something like that and get it working. Or even just go check on it, make sure it's resilvered correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the nice things about Connect is how you get connected to Connect. It's all OAuth. So you log in, use your OAuth provider of choice. Great, easy, just a click or two to get in. And then once you're in, there's this idea of a secure key ring. So I should explain that briefly. So say you have more than one TrueNAS system and you don't want to go log into each of them every time you bring up the single pane of glass management system, but you also don't necessarily want to like put keys on cloud infrastructure that we have access to. Again, we don't want to see them. So the idea of a secure key ring is more like LastPass or, you know, Bitwarden, for example, where everything's all handled in your browser securely and encrypted in your browser. Again, doesn't necessarily, we never see your keys. We don't want to see your keys. But once you OAuth log in, you can then use one password to unlock all your TrueNASs. And now you're in and you can get about to your administrative tasks, which is super helpful. And then let's see, what else we get to? Oh, web-driven installation. We've mentioned this before. I think we had some threads on this. One of the things we added was the ability to discover if you have a TrueNAS system booted up and waiting to be installed from the installer, and then execute that over the web interface. Basically, what it means is you don't have to go attach via, you know, IPMI or go plug a keyboard and, you know, monitor into a system to be able to install it, especially in your home. If you're just on the home network, that's super convenient. You stay in your browser the whole time. Next, finish. Great. My TrueNAS is up and running.
Pretty much. I've actually seen somebody say they used it for a system that they wanted to run headless. So they actually ran it without a GPU entirely. their board did allow them to boot without one. And they said, you know, well, it booted, but I can't see the screen. How do I install TrueNAS? I said, well, if you're willing to give, you know, 2510 RCE and TrueNAS Connect a shot, here you go. Go try this and do a web-driven installation. And they said, first of all, they said, well, what is that? And then, oh, wow, this is amazing. I don't have to do that. Okay. They plugged the USB stick in, waited for it to show up and connect, did the install, walked over, pulled the stick out, rebooted. And they said, that was incredibly easy. I have a TrueNAS system and I didn't really have to touch it.
It's nice, huh? Yeah. Well, and also because the whole install and everything's being done over, again, SSL, secure connections, all that good stuff. So it's still good. Even on your home network, it makes me feel warm and fuzzy when I see the lock sign.
Yeah. And they didn't have to go hunt down which DHCP IP it picked up from their router. Mm-hmm. They just said it just showed up here. That was incredible.
Yeah. 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 Very nice. Mm-hmm. Other things we've added. So again, these are all things available in the open beta now. Inventory management. So being able to look and kind of grab an inventory of all the drives and hardware of your TrueNAS systems, that's important, you know, depending on how particular you are about checking all the drive models and makes and all that good stuff. And then the next one is a feature I kind of like, shared access. So this is the ability to say, I have some systems registered in my TrueNAS Connect account. I would like to share the visibility of that system to another user running TrueNAS Connect. So say you have multiple administrators either in your home or small business, you can say, okay, I'm going to invite, you know, Bob so that these TrueNAS systems show up in his dashboard. Now, that doesn't share credentials. Bob, when he sees the system show up, he still has to authenticate to the TrueNAS, and he may have his own TrueNAS admin account. You may have a shared TrueNAS admin account. Again, that's your choice. You secure it as secure as you want it to be, right? And that was the idea is, you know, we've, what was it? Fangtooth, or maybe it was earlier, Electric Eel, we introduced the idea of having multiple administrators, including those maybe coming from Active Directory. So Bob could be an Active Directory user, for example, and that's how it's managed. So again, just facilitates that and makes it easy for your central IT department to say, okay, we brought a new IT junior member on board. We're going to make TrueNAS, these systems show up in their dashboard, or in our own use case, because we were thinking how we would use this, IT may expose a handful of TrueNAS systems to the engineering department leads, for example. But maybe they don't get to see the ones running for the support team, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Even just in the shared access sort of home use case, I'm going, well, you know, I could give some member of my, you know, extended family access here and let them use it as their backup target. I let them replicate into mine because, well, being the, you know, the family IT, it kind of means, you know, you're responsible for managing a lot of things. But I said, hey, I can let you have access to your own systems, even in a limited sort of managed context, and say, you know, mine's the HQ, you're kind of the satellite offices, and we're replicating all around. But one more thing, just in regards for these home built systems, is custom enclosure management. So enclosure management's been a piece that's been available on the TrueNAS Enterprise and in our own TrueNAS Mini hardware. But we've had a lot of people asking, is there a way we can do this enclosure management and drive identification and things for my own home-built system? And until now, the answer has been, well, unfortunately not. But now with TrueNAS Connect in the open beta, we've made this available for people to basically say, hey, let's let you construct these visual representations of how your drives are in your system. Got a lot of different ways you can, you know, lay out your topologies, whether it's you've built, you know, we've made some pre-built ones for rack mounts and a couple desktop style towers, but you can basically build it out by, you know, rows, columns, left to right, right to left, top down ordering, however you'd like. And you could build these visual representations. So with that inventory management Chris talked about before, you start sort of dragging and dropping your drives and saying, okay, this one's in this bay. You can line them all up and then it'll associate them and display them by their pool, their status, and other neat things like that. So in the scenario, like I said, where I happen to have a couple different systems at other sites, suddenly I'd say, hey, this one just alerted me that the drive in the third bay is down, and I can literally send a picture screenshot to say, hey, this one has a problem. Please go pull this one and put this new one in there, and everything else will be fine. I'll take care of it. But it's, you know, it's remote hands for your home systems. It's pretty helpful.
Yeah, it's very nice. And we'd love to get feedback on this one in particular. We tried to make it as easy as possible. Granted, there's a bit of manual setup you have to do, but it's drag and drop. It's very convenient because we don't know how your system's wired up internally, for example, you know, which cables are going to which slots on the front of the system. Those are all the things we manage with our enterprise product. So it's just automatic You just deploy it and it's just magic. Oh, I see where all the drives are. But for your homebrew systems, you're going to have to do a little bit of setup. But once it's done, boy, it is handy. So I definitely give that a shot. And again, give us feedback. We want to hear what you think.
Yeah, we're really just only kind of scratching the surface here. Like this is the current features in the, you know, the public preview or the
open beta.
Yeah. But like, let's talk about some things that are coming real soon, Chris. Like the one big one you want to talk about. Replication management.
You mentioned replication already. You teased it. So that's one that's actually going to be debuting very soon here. It's almost ready to push live. So one of the things we are aware of is once you have a system like TrueNAS Connect, a web interface that can talk to multiple TrueNASs simultaneously, is it gives you the ability to do neat things that involve coordination between multiple systems. So replication is a perfect example of that. Gone are the days of having to log in on system A and then go manually put in a bunch of info and point it to system B and all that good stuff. Instead, we can just visually through one interface say, I have two systems. I'd like to just take this data set and point it there, please. You're done. Like let the interface can talk to both systems, exchange keys, set up all the replication targets, all that good stuff. And then you get the nice visual representation in real time that can even show you when that replication stream is live and all that good stuff. Because again, it's looking at both systems and can visualize those things better. Part of that user experience thing we talked about. We just want to make it more natural and intuitive for setting up things like I want data to go from here to there. In that same vein though, Chris, you know, we're not going to stop there. Down the road, we expect to further expand upon this kind of capability where it's less about replication and more about I have a share here or a thing here, an app, a VM or a whatever. Can I move that, please? Point it over there and then let Connect do all the coordination and things and make that happen automatically in the background. Like we want to make the administrative side of like your data management and mobility just brain dead simple because it should be. And we can definitely do that in the future.
Exactly. So, I mean, for those of you who are excited about this, for our early adopters, testers, please absolutely get out there, kick the tires. Find the rough edges that we can help sand and polish down. Let us know of any issues. It's been a lot of work. They've been building this for a long time. It's very ambitious goals. So we want to make sure that, you know, all those foundations of it, the base layer is really rock solid before we get into the next wave of the major feature development. Like Chris says, you know, Replication Manager is just around the corner. Once that comes out, you know, hey, like everybody feel free. If you've got multiple systems, pile on that one, test it out. Find a way to break it and then send it back in and say, hey, I managed to break it. Can you guys fix this? And the answer is, of course we can. We should be able to fix that for you.
Great. Well, hey, we got some follow-up from our last episode about Spotlight support. We had a lot of really good questions come in on the YouTube feed in particular. So we went and kind of combed through and cherry-picked some of the interesting ones that are good to address because maybe we didn't touch on them the last episode. We want to do more of that in the future going forward too. So if there are questions about Connect, I imagine today, there are other features of 2510. Feel free to ask and we'll try and address it in the upcoming episode. But we'll start with George LZA, who says, the Linux protocol you're using, and he just has arrow, is it find? That's really cute, George, but no, it is not find. It is an actual, like, properly written daemon that does all kinds of things. Find's pretty crude, and find takes a long time because it's walking your tree as well, typically. So this is a lot more in-depth. You know, again, you have to go and read files. You have to look at metadata. You got to read all that image data like pixel height and DPIs and GPS coordinates and what model phone was it taken on, blah, blah, blah. You got to index all that. Or your PDFs. How many pages is the PDF? Let's sample some of the content on the first X number of pages. That way, when you do a content query search, you can search for maybe a word or two you think might be in the document. Boom, you get your results instantly. So a little more complicated than just a find integration.
Yeah, it's a little bit more than, you know, the LS with a grep on the end. So,
all right. I mean, that's how we used to do it in the old days, but no, we're not going to that. So
trying to get something a little bit more modern. So the next one's from Sean Koppenhofer, and hopefully I didn't mangle your name too bad. He says, will a ZFS send, so a replication, also send over the true search index of everything that was sent, or will the destination need to be re-indexing? Just a thought. Well, in this one, I mean, yeah, we could find a way to send the index of it, but the challenge is going to be, for one, it would have to land in the same sort of logical path when you're replicating the data. So otherwise your index is going to be looking for it on the logical path to where it used to be on the source side in terms of like your folder, your data set names. plus the re-indexing itself is, it's actually pretty lightweight. Like Chris said, we were testing this on like basically an embedded Ryzen processor and a handful of gigs of RAM. So re-indexing on the destination is probably going to be just as fast and not, yeah. You know, eliminate all those weird cases where it says, hey, I was looking for all these things. They used to be on, you know, a pool named source pool, and now they're on a pool named destination pool. Well, I need to re-index them anyways. So,
yeah, yeah. Again, the index is going to live where you point it at. You're going to want it on an SSD. It's going to be on a pool. Could you replicate it? Sure. Do you need to? No. We tried to make it so you don't need to. Once you start the process on the new system and it starts the indexing process, you can get results instantly while it's indexing. You can query and all that good stuff. It's and the indexing is designed to be lightweight enough. So unless you have some ridiculously large index, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions of files, you can probably wait the hour or two it takes to do a full re-index, and it's not that big a deal. Now, granted, if you're on real slow, busy disk-based systems, it will be more painful. Sure, I get that. But again, hopefully this isn't something you're doing that often. And if your search index needs to be rebuilt over a day or two, and you do that once every few years because you're moving to new hardware, maybe that's not a big deal.
Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead for the next one, Chris, there.
Okay. AJH, I don't know how to pronounce it. Maybe it's not pronounceable. Okay. Anyway, since I have no Macs, this isn't really useful for me yet. But if Windows Search is integrated, then I'm interested. Yes, that is true. We would like to see that get added down the road too, and it'll use the same index in the back end, hopefully, when all that happens. A few thoughts, though, he had. He said, would indexing benefit significantly from a special metadata VDEV on a spinning disk pool? I assume yes. Yes and no. So you'll want the index itself, the actual search database index, to live on an SSD again. That's not going to necessarily go on a special metadata VDEV. You'll want that just to live on SSD flash somewhere. Now, as far as the indexing process goes, yes, a special metadata VDEV will help doing the initial kind of walking the tree, for example, when we're just doing listings and other things, just to get that initial, like, hey, what files are out there? That will be accelerated. But you have to understand the indexer is also opening those files and sampling. So it has to go and read the first, you know, 8K, for example, of an image file to grab all that good EXIF data. That doesn't necessarily get accelerated by the special metadata VDEV.
Yeah, then if you're talking about using it like, hey, I don't want to make a dedicated SSD pool. I want to try and use a special metadata VDEV. There's different ways, and they're applicable to all kinds of data, not just the IndexedDB, to basically say, hey, I want to force this whole data set to live on the special VDEV. There's ways to do that. I think I talked about it in a previous comment reply when we brought up the whole Spotlight search, but you basically would set that special small blocks value greater than or equal to the record size of the data set, where it will just say, hey, every block in this data set is special. Obviously, you don't set that on your main entire pool. You would have to make a separate data set to say, hey, put the TrueSearch index here. Okay, now change the settings on this data set. Now everything is special. But then, of course, you need to make sure you have the capacity on that special metadata VDEV and the redundancy in order to preserve the integrity and the safety of that search DB. I guess that kind of leads into question two here, Chris, where he says same question.
Yeah. Asking more or less about, could you have the index database copied into RAM? If it's just a few gigs, maybe people will be willing to make that trade, he says. So here's what I'd recommend. I'd say yes and no. It's already kind of doing that. If you're using the database a lot, it's already going to be an ARC. So that's a win right there. But it's also designed and architected in such a way where you don't need to do that and the results are still snappy. So the kind of worst case scenario I've been testing right now is 100 million files indexed, which I think is probably on the extreme side of things. And we're talking 100 million heavy files, like a lot of image data with a lot of metadata index, right? Okay, well, in that case, my indexes are still in the 35, 40 gig ranges. It's not in ARC, but I'm still doing advanced queries and hitting under a second in response time for getting like an advanced query. I'm searching the whole index, boom, I get a response in under a second, you know, hundreds of milliseconds, that kind of thing. That is with the index living on an SSD. So again, you want it on an SSD at the end of the day, but that's still pretty reasonable. I don't think you have to go so extreme to say I need it all in RAM.
Yeah, the technology you set up the DB with the sharded databases, we talked about that again in the previous episode. It's really efficient and it works very well, but you do want it to be on an SSD. You can have it. If you're hitting it a lot, it's going to naturally live up in RAM, in ARC, mm-hmm. because from the perspective of ZFS, it's saying, well, it's some really hot file. It's really, really hot data.
Yeah.
I want to put this up in RAM. So if you have tons of RAM, it'll sort of say the more indexes you're searching, the more that you're hitting on them, yeah. it's going to live up in RAM. So that's all you have to do with that one.
Yeah, we just designed it to be fast from day one because I'm assuming it's not going to be an ARC. I mean, how often are you really sitting in Spotlight on your Mac doing searches looking for files? Are you doing it every moment of every day, or is it more of a every so often I go type a keyword in and look for that picture or image? So yeah. again, if you're using it heavy, you're doing a lot of image work and you're looking for files every few seconds, sure, it'll end up in ARC, but you don't need to do that.
Yeah. And I guess the final portion of this one, you already answered this one a little bit, Chris, about would it be using a unified DB with, you know, Windows and Spotlight, or would they be separate? Well, they're same backend service, same backend DB.
Yeah, so. Just a different protocol. You expose it to the clients via, but yeah, we don't want to go and duplicate. It would be kind of silly to have two indexing services.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, we have Wapai, who says, I still don't get why the TrueNAS team isn't working on a file manager within TrueNAS itself. Then you could search with the server, or within the server, rather than SMB. Does the fact that there is no search protocol within Linux have something to do with this? Why not walk before you can run? Develop a proper file manager first. What am I missing here? Not sure how it all work. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's interesting. I think we've teased this on a previous episode. But yes, that's actually on the feature list for Half Moon 2604, which will be next year. We will talk about that in detail in a future episode on a proper file manager built into TrueNAS itself, which, by the way, will have integration with the indexing service and search service. So, stay tuned. There'll be a lot more we could talk about that here in the near future.
Absolutely. And our last little question we're going to pull from YouTube today is from Ward TJ. He says, in thinking about the future of the product, have we made any considerations or planning for moving TrueNAS into a control/data/access plane style setup? So basically, you know, the web UI is its own layer in a container, the middleware is its own container, et cetera. He talks about being able to do updates without having to reboot the system unless it's base functionality in the kernel, like a ZFS upgrade. He says it might be easier to maintain than the monolithic OS approach. So have we thought about, you know, a sharded operating system here, Chris?
We've actually talked about that even back when we started the first scale development. This is the kind of thing us engineers sit around the water cooler, you know, in the break room and kind of just kick around like, oh man, wouldn't it be nice to do this and that? At the end of the day, it's a lot of work though. And I mean a lot of work. And it doesn't necessarily give you any new functionality apart from what you mentioned, the whole, like I can do an update to Samba, for example, without rebooting the system. That's kind of one of the primary benefits you'd see. A lot of the other things would be behind the scenes, the kind of things that make us engineers happy. Like, oh, it's clean. I have separation of concerns and like everything's running containerized and I can do deploy and test. So that may happen. I'm not saying no to it. I'm just saying it's not going to be a small effort. It is a pretty massive kind of architectural overhaul to get to that utopia. And maybe we end up there someday. Now, there are problems on the other side. Nothing's perfect. There's never an idea that's like 100% win. There's always a trade-off, right? And now as soon as you go to containerization, now I got different sets of problems of, well, I need this container to be very tightly integrated with that one. And I have to go and break down security features that containers naturally want to put up so that they can more closely interface together. And, oh, now I have a container running and it doesn't necessarily match the libraries on the host, for example. ZFS lives on the host. Okay. Yeah, it does open up a lot more concerns and things we have to go address correctly to make it all very seamless and work very well integrated. So the monolithic approach we do have now, at least everything kind of lives in the same sandbox, if you will, and it makes it easy to make things talk to one another and put up the right boundaries where we want them, as opposed to having to go and say, well, I put this container thing out there and now I'm stripping away all the container goodness.
Yeah. That's a good explanation, Chris. And like we said, we're always interested in all of these questions, whether they're something that's, you know, simple or something that's a, you know, multiple years of work. So we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And please continue to drop them in the comments. I think with that, we're probably wrapped up for the day, Chris. We've had a pretty solid episode here. We've gone from, you know, the pre-release of 2510 to a teaser for the new product of TrueNAS Connect, and then jumping onto some questions answered, and no doubt more questions will be generated. So we thank you again.
Looking forward to them.
Yeah. Thank you again for tuning in, everybody. As always, please drop your questions in the comment section below in an email to t3@truenas.com. Please make sure you do the usual YouTube things. Like the video, give us a subscribe, ring the notification bell so you get a notification for the next time we go live here. And we will see you all on the next episode.